Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Conservationist Assembled podcast, a show that seeks to unite Earth's mightiest advocates in a mission to ensure a future for our planet's incredible habitats and its awesome inhabitants. I am your host, Johnny Bloxham, and for this episode we are returning to the island of Madagascar, where we have been in a previous episode to discuss the awesome small carnivores on the island. However, in this episode, we are discussing a lesser-known species of the family of animals that has arguably put Madagascar's wildlife on the map. Today, we are talking all about the northern giant mouse lemur. Join the podcast and our expert guest, Dr. Dan Hending, as we trek to the northern part of the island to find out all about this mysterious lemur. Please welcome Dan to the podcast as he shares his stories, expertise, and passion with us. Dan, thank you for joining us today on the podcast. How's it going?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Happy to be here. How are you?
Yeah, really well, thank you. I'm thrilled to have you on the podcast and I'm happy to hear you're doing well. And yeah, you know, really excited to be discussing, quite frankly, a really lesser known lemur species. When we obviously talk about lemurs, we know that they've become very publicly aware as a result of animated film franchises, and certainly nature documentaries now, but you know, due to the vast amount of lemurs there are still certainly some that don't get the spotlight.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's I think about 108 species of lemur currently described at the moment, not including subspecies, and obviously many people are aware of the charismatic species, you know, the ring-tailed lemur, other day-active species such as the safaka, and other common lemurs, which people frequently see in local zoos. However, people are not aware that about 3/4 of all lemur species are nocturnal, highly cryptic, so many species resemble each other, and so a lot of people are not aware of the huge diversity we have. Certainly these are the groups that I've been more involved in my research, so always happy to talk about these guys and hopefully introduce them to a wider audience.
Absolutely, yeah, common goal there. Hopefully we'll get some spotlights put on some of these species. But before we get into it, Dan, yeah, please introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm Dr. Daniel Hending. I'm currently a postdoc at the University of Oxford. Actually, in my current role, I'm conducting research on African elephants, so it's slightly different to all of my previous research on lemurs, which are significantly smaller. but since first finishing my BSc degree in conservation biology at the University of the West of England, I became quite heavily interested in conservation issues related to lemurs in Madagascar. As a student, a lot of the course content I had was in collaboration with Bristol Zoological Society, and they have a conservation program in northwest Madagascar. They work to protect several different lemur species there, and I was particularly interested in the issues that lemurs are facing, you know, deforestation, and what we can do to protect their populations. So I undertook a master's project studying the Sambarano mouse lemur, which is also a relatively unknown species of nocturnal lemur. And I was able to actually go to Madagascar and conduct some field research there. And from then, I continued my research at PhD level, expanding on the number of species that I was studying and looking at how their ecology and their populations are affected by forest fragmentation specifically. Since becoming a postdoc, I've also continued my involvement in lemur research and conservation in Madagascar. And I've got some students now continuing the work that I've done, and I've also got several other projects I'm working on in collaboration with other researchers.
Amazing. So, in terms of then the northern giant mouse lemur, because I'm sure we are probably going to talk about a variety of different species as the episode progresses, but in terms of the northern giant mouse lemur, A, why are we talking about that species in particular? And B, can you just tell us about that particular species?
Yeah, so the area where I've conducted most of my research in Madagascar is in the northwest, an area called Saamalaza, which is it's a very remote area of Madagascar. It's very difficult to reach. There's no roads that go onto the peninsula, so the area is very underdeveloped, and because it's so remote, not many people have conducted research there. One of the exceptions to this is Bristol Zoological Society. That's where their program is based, and they work in collaboration with the AEECL, which is a Madagascar-based conservation NGO. So it's really been just those two organizations that have been protecting and studying the lemurs there, and my master's work on the Sambarane mouse lemur was based there, and having worked in the forest there, the one of the other species present is the northern giant mouse lemur. It's probably more abundant than the species I was working on at the time, and it became the main focal species for my PhD work. It was certainly the species I came into contact with in the forest most often, and it's quite an interesting species in its social organization. So it forages solitarily, but yet it sleeps with other members of its group, and it's also a very understudied species. So it was a species that became quite at the forefront of my PhD research. It's also endemic to only the northwestern area of Madagascar. So you can find it in Saamalaza, but also a few other neighboring forests. But within its range, Saamalaza is the only national park. So this is the only area where we can protect this species to reliably without having to worry about too much deforestation. And as there is a research station there, it's a particularly good place to study it. So yeah, the northern giant mouse lemur is one of the sort of main lemur species you encounter if you work in that area of Madagascar.
It's great to hear that the national park is protected, because we do hear that some national parks are national parks in name only. So it's good to hear that there is a level of protection for that particular region.
Yeah, certainly in Madagascar, and I think throughout the tropics more generally, national parks, we sometimes just refer to them as paper parks because, as you said, this can be by name only. But because there's conservation organizations and researchers that actually have a presence within this national park, and the local communities that live within the boundary of the national park have been quite heavily involved in the work that these societies do, and they've been there's conservation education programs, and people are engaging in the work that goes on in the national park. So it's quite a broad collaborative effort of not just the conservationists but also the local community to prevent the loss of the habitat in this area. So there's another reason why it's a very nice area to work in as a researcher.
Yeah, definitely. So in terms of not trying to compare northern giant mouse lemur to other lemur species, but because we're more aware of lemurs like the ringtails or Sifakas Indrii, how do their behaviours or ecology or anything kind of compare to them? Are they very similar or are they quite different?
In many ways, they are quite similar. They depend on forest for survival, which makes all lemurs highly susceptible to the loss of their habitat. However, you tend to see with the nocturnal species, including the northern giant mouse lemur, they are a little bit more generalist in comparison to some of the day active lemurs. What I mean by generalist is they have a much more adaptable diet. They eat a range of food. Many of the day active lemurs, for example, they rely heavily on fruit, whereas the northern giant mouse lemur and some of the other nocturnal species, they eat fruit, flowers, invertebrates. The northern giant mouse lemur is particularly interesting because we've observed it eating birds and other vertebrates as well, which is quite a unique behavior. I don't think this has been reported with any other species. And in addition to their dietary flexibility, they seem to tolerate more degraded and anthropogenic areas in comparison to some of the larger bodied day active species. So you encounter northern giant mouse lemur at the forest edge quite frequently. Some of my research suggests that their population density is actually unaffected by edge effects and also by forest fragmentation. So they're found in continuous primary forest, but also in fragmented secondary forest. And you can also observe them outside of natural forest habitat. They sometimes venture into plantation areas, which is quite interesting. These sort of plantation and other anthropogenic areas are mainly vectors through which they can travel, but it does demonstrate that they are somewhat flexible and adaptable to new environments, which other lemur species are perhaps not quite as able to do.
So you mentioned kind of one thing that isn't a threat to them in terms of kind of fragmentation. I believe they were recently discovered, but so might not necessarily have a population number for them yet.
So the northern giant mouse lemur is one of two species in the giant mouse lemur genus. The Mirza genus is the scientific name. The Mirza genus was originally thought to be one species distributed throughout the west of the island, but the northern giant mouse lemur, which is the sort of northern half of that original population, restricted to only the northwest, was described as a distinct species. I believe about 20 years ago now. And we certainly have estimates of its density in Saar Malaza, and we're able to use that data to work out roughly how many individuals are present within the national park, as we know roughly how much forest is there. But outside of the national park, this is still a very big question. And as forest habitat outside of protected areas is still decreasing, we have to assume that northern giant mouse lemur populations, and indeed population of all lemurs in the area, are still declining, and therefore the northern giant mouse lemur is currently listed as vulnerable on the IUCN Red List. So it is a species of conservation concern, and it therefore warrants the research attention and the conservation attention that it's currently receiving.
So what are some of the threats to them then?
Well, whilst they can tolerate suboptimal degraded habitat, they still do require vegetation to live in. So fragmented forest they can still live in, but if that forest disappears entirely, then they simply have nowhere else to go. So deforestation is still the primary threat. Madagascar is also quite heavily impacted by climate change. Climate change is obviously a major issue worldwide, but certain areas of the world seem to be exhibiting quite profound effects of climate change already. And Madagascar is one of these main places. It's one of the few areas where we've actually seen climate change induced famine, in which is a recent occurrence. Current forecasts indicate that the forest habitat itself is actually likely to decline in response to climate change. It may get too hot for some of the tree species. And so this is, of course, another threat to lemurs and their habitat. And for the northern giant mouse lemur, outside of protected areas, in some places, people do still hunt lemurs as a food source. Again, it's not so much as a threat for the nocturnal species, such as the northern giant mouse lemur, because they are that little bit smaller than their day active relatives, but it is still a threat that they do face in some areas.
So then you've mentioned how Bristol and AEECL are quite well established in the Northwestern Territories. Are there any forms of government aid or government involvement in lemur conservation at all?
On a Madagascar scale, absolutely. There's been a lot of money invested in protected areas in Madagascar. Whilst I'm certainly no expert in where these funds come from, I do know that Madagascar has pledged to increase its protected area network. So we'll see how that develops in the coming years. And certainly a lot of non-governmental organizations that support global conservation efforts have invested quite heavily in lemur conservation. So in the last 7 or 8 years in particular, there's been a lot of money invested in lemur conservation and the protection of their habitat via the Lemur Conservation Action Plan. That was a big undertaking involving many donors and many researchers. And then also on a small scale, so my work in Saar Malaza has been, very targeted at a few species in one particular area. There's a lot of societies which support projects such as mine, and there's been many other researchers from within Madagascar and also foreign researchers, students that have looked at particular target species of conservation concern and have been able to get some important work funded by these organizations.
Fantastic. And so then I suppose what actions need to happen to help improve the chances of survival for the northern giant mouse lemur?
Well, I think the most important thing is to slow down and hopefully stop the loss of forest. Locally in Saar Malaza National Park, this has been achieved. We know that people don't actively cut down the forest as much as they used to, although it does happen in some cases. However, what with the climate change as well, bushfires also can cause forest loss. So there's always ways in which we can better protect that forest habitat. Especially outside of the protected areas, though, I think more needs to be done to prevent the loss of this forest habitat. So that's the main way which we can prevent the situation from becoming worse. However, many organizations are now actively running reforestation and habitat restoration programs. So this is the main way in which we can reverse the damage which has already been done. Certainly in Saar Malaza, there is a reforestation project which is now underway. And it's likely that in the coming decades, reforestation efforts will be crucial to restoring some of the natural habitat. But the problem is Whereas an area of forest can take only hours or days to cut down, it takes many years to re-establish that forest, and it's often very, very difficult to determine which species should be planted. How exactly do we regenerate forests so that it replicates the habitat that was originally there? And the Bristol Zoo and the ACL in Tsavo Laza have had to trial many different approaches and working out the best tree species to plant. And I believe this is the same in other areas of Madagascar as well. So yeah, the key message is stop the loss of natural habitat, and if we can, try and restore some of that natural habitat that's already being lost.
Absolutely, and it's great that you've mentioned certainly in Salamahaz. Did I say that right? Salah
Yeah, Sahamalaza.
Sahamalaza.
It's a little bit of a mouthful if you're
It
not
is.
familiar with the term.
It's great that kind of. You're seeing the decline in the destruction. So clearly there is a kind of a community wanting lemurs to stay. And what would you say then that having lemurs around brings to the community? What incentive is there to keep lemurs around?
Well, I think the thing is, in a natural forest, lemurs are generally in a separate habitat to where humans are. People tend to live outside of the forest. However, you find that in Saramalaza, certainly the people that live in villages closest to the neighboring forests, people do seem to have a big sense of pride that they have these animals so close to them. They're aware that they cannot be found anywhere else. I've already mentioned that the northern giant mouse lemur is endemic to only the northwest, but there's a couple of other species, the blue-eyed black lemur and also the Sahamalaza sportive lemur. Those two can only be found within the national park. And the people that live within the national park do have quite a sense of pride that they have these animals so close to them. And I think a lot of people, they don't want to see them disappear. So where they can, they want to, actively participate in the conservation, or at least avoid making a bad situation worse. Other than that, we know that in other areas of Madagascar, lemurs, they can venture into areas that humans use, such as plantations, but in most cases, lemurs are not considered as a pest. They don't eat the crops that people cultivate. And I think most people in Madagascar generally like to see lemurs around. They're the flagship group of animals for the country. And yeah, while some people do hunt them out of need, most people see lemurs as a major benefit to them. And also, the ecotourism industry in Madagascar is huge for the economy. And a lot of people that visit Madagascar do so purely to see the lemurs. So having lemurs disappear would have consequences for local people that depend especially on that ecotourism income.
And then bringing it to kind of overseas and people who aren't in Madagascar, how can everyone get involved with lemur conservation?
It's a very good question. I think many of the specific conservation regimes happening with lemurs are coordinated by either non-governmental organizations or zoos. So one way in which you can contribute and support the efforts of the researcher is to visit your local zoos. You can learn about the animals that such societies are actively protecting. If you visit your zoos, a lot of the money you pay to visit the zoos is then reinvested into these conservation schemes. So that, of course, helps. As I mentioned, ecotourism is a major source of income for the Malagasy people in Madagascar, and a lot of the money that is taken is reinvested into grassroots projects, not just conservation, but also improving the livelihoods of people that live alongside the forest. For people that are particularly interested in wildlife and would like to visit Madagascar, by actually going there and seeing lemurs in their natural habitat, this can certainly help. And I think just raising awareness of the plight of endangered animals such as the lemurs. I think not everyone is aware of how dire the situation is. So I think just sharing the knowledge that you have with other people and raising awareness is also an important important contributor to the conservation cause.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose, a lot of people like numbers in terms of kind of getting the message across. So of the, 108 lemur species that we know of, and obviously the dire situation across the board, roughly how many are we kind of looking at as threatened species?
All apart from two. Yeah, so there's
Wow.
two species currently listed as least concern on the IUCN Red List, and they are the grey mouse lemur and the greyish brown mouse lemur. Again, they're listed as least concern because they have a wide distribution and they can be found in a range of different habitat types, degraded forest, also highly anthropogenic areas, but all other species are listed as either vulnerable, endangered, or critically endangered. So the situation ranges from severe to incredibly severe for most species. And we also still know very little about a lot of the individual taxa. This is mainly because a lot of species have only been described in the last 20 years, due to this cryptic species complex. Scientists simply weren't aware that we had this diversity. And then, describing new species decreases the population of one already endangered animal down into several even more
Sure.
smaller and therefore more endangered populations. And then coupled with the increasing deforestation, it's become probably the biggest conservation concern in terms of mammals worldwide. I think lemurs are probably the most threatened.
Sure. So then kind of moving away, because you've detailed really the picture of not just northern giant mouse lemurs, but lemurs in general really, really nicely. We're going to kind of get on to some more light-hearted notes before we take a dive into to your career and your background. So do you have a particular favorite characteristic or fact about the northern giant mouse lemur?
So the one fact that always comes to mind with the northern giant mouse lemur is that of all primates, not just lemurs, the northern giant mouse lemur has the largest testes relative to body size of any primate. So even though the species is very understudied, I think the first researcher to conduct a systematic study of the northern giant mouse lemur just happened to notice the rather large testes that the males had, and they were able to conduct a comparison with other primate species and relative to body size. So they have the largest testes, and having handled northern giant mouse lemurs in the wild myself, I can back up that claim.
That's quite the research paper to have your name to attach
Is.
to.
The thing is, facts like this is if people remember them.
Yeah,
So,
definitely. And it's funny. I'm glad you explained that because Briefly before we jumped on this Zoom call, I did Google Northern Giant Mouse Lemur just to have a look at a picture of them. And before I think, when Google predicts what you're trying to type, it was Northern Giant Mouse Lemur testes. And it obviously I didn't know that at the time, but now it makes perfect sense and clearly people are searching it.
It's an interesting thing, and it's certainly something people remember. And if I had to recall one fact about this species, that's the one that always comes to the front of my mind.
And I suppose it makes it easy to differentiate between males and females when you're looking into populations as well.
When you observe nocturnal lemurs from a distance, it's very difficult to find them in the first place. And when you're trying to work out who's who in a study population, males and females is quite an important thing that you need to differentiate. But something such as that does certainly make our jobs a lot easier.
And I suppose then, do you remember what your first experience with a northern giant mouse lemur was?
It was when I was a master's student and I was in Sar Malaza studying the Zamorano mouse lemur, which is a significantly smaller relative of the northern giant mouse lemur. They live alongside each other in the forests. We would frequently encounter the northern giant mouse lemur at night, and I think the one thing I always remember about it is just how vocal they are. They have these very loud calls. Because the smaller Zamorano mouse lemur, it mainly communicates in ultrasound, so you can't really hear the individuals communicating over long distances, where the northern giant mouse lemur, it does have calls that are in the more audible range. And so they're a lot louder, they travel through the forest a lot further. And so when you venture into the forest at night, the one lemur that you can hear most of all is the northern giant mouse lemur. So it was just, I think the first, my first impression of them was just, they're very loud and they tend to dominate the soundscape in the area.
Certainly, I imagine adds to the experience of, trekking through the bush at night time when you're not really necessarily relying on your vision as much as other senses.
Yeah, you can certainly find things a lot easier by the sound. And it's a good way to actually study them as well, is just to rely on acoustic surveys and seeing where they're present and absent just by listening for them.
So aside from kind of first experiences with the lemurs then, what kind of was your first experience with Madagascar, or kind of describe to us how you were feeling when you first knew that you were heading out to Madagascar?
Well, when I started planning my research project with Bristol Zoo, and they said, "Oh, you should actually go out and conduct some field work," it was incredibly exciting. I'd never been to the tropics before, so yeah, it was a really exciting experience. Also quite daunting. It was my first research project that I led, and I had to plan most of the logistics. I had to work out how are we going to study these animals in the field, what equipment do we use, and then I also had to apply for the grants to cover the costs. I mean, fortunately, I was able to secure funding, as it's a big conservation problem that we have for these lemurs. So several societies did provide grant money for my work, which was good. But yeah, it's quite daunting building up to it. But once I got there, it was great being in the field. But yeah, I think the other thing of note was just how poor Madagascar is in comparison to many other countries. It's one of the poorest countries in the world. This is something I think that has contributed to the deforestation and the loss of habitat. People are still very much dependent on whatever resources are around them. So, you know, it was stepping into a place unlike anywhere else I'd ever been before. But there's nowhere like Madagascar, and I think if anyone is offered the opportunity to visit, they absolutely should go. The wildlife is incredible, and it's commonly referred to as the eighth continent because there's so many different parts of the country. You have rainforest in the east, you have dry forest in the west, spiny forest in the south, and then you have lemurs, which you can't find anywhere else, baobabs, which are another flagship species of Madagascar. So if you get the chance, I highly recommend going.
And so, yeah, how, I mean, A, when was the first time you went to Madagascar? And B, have you been back since?
Yeah, so the first time I went as a master's student was in 2015. I think I've been back four or five times now. I went back to work on another project in 2017, and then I started my PhD work, which focused heavily on the northern giant mouse lemur in 2019. Unfortunately, I couldn't go back during the COVID pandemic because of the situation with the borders and flights. But I was able to go back and finish that work in 2021 and 2022. And yeah, I'm very much looking forward to getting back there, hopefully in the near future, to maybe continue some more research. Also, my wife is from Madagascar. I met her the first time I went out there, so I'm sure I'll be going back there for family related reasons as well. So
Amazing. And so between, you know, your first visit in 2015 and your most recent visit, how would you say the landscape has changed?
so on a local scale in Sarmalaza, it's thankfully not changed too much. We, you know, the forest that was there when I first visited is still there, which I've heard stories of researchers going back to field sites and the forest that they've worked in for many years has just disappeared. So luckily, we're not seeing large-scale change in the Sarmalaza National Park. And another encouraging thing, especially in the capital, is then there are now signs of development, which is something that's been very rare over the last decades. There's been very little development in Madagascar, but it seems that things are starting to improve a little bit. But yeah, it was always good to know that with Sarmalaza, if you go back, you shouldn't expect to see too much change because the forests are quite well protected.
Yeah, it's really quite comforting, I imagine.
Yeah.
So then, obviously, we know, or kind of, at what point growing up did you know you was going to get involved in conservation?
That's a good question. I think as a student at school, I think I was doing my A levels, and I knew I wanted to do something in science, and I was probably leaning towards biology. But I always remember our two biology teachers, they took a group of us on a week-long field course down to Devon in the UK. So it was near the seaside, and we did a lot of like ecological surveys in various areas on the coast, also forest and grassland habitats, and it was very much themed on ecology and conservation. I think that was when I decided that I wanted to work in that field. Generally, if you are a researcher looking at ecological processes and behavioral ecology, your work is always very strongly linked to conservation as you use that data to work out the best ways in which you can manage and protect populations in the wild. And of course, it's always rewarding to know that your research directly contributes to conservation.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose then, to kind of pick apart your role a bit more, when you're not in the field, what does a typical day look like for you?
I think it depends on which side of being in the field you are. If it's leading up to field work, it's very much looking at solving logistical challenges and preparing for field work. But right now, so last year I was on a 4 month stint in Kenya conducting research for my current position. And because we've collected so much data, we're now in the process of analyzing the data. And very much after completing field work, the average day is organizing data, analysis of that data to answer your specific research questions, and then seeing how this relates to conservation challenges in the areas that you work, and then trying to publish those results and get them available to the wider scientific community, and then also working in collaboration with conservation organizations to implement that the findings and facilitate and inform the on the ground applied conservation actions.
So, what is there one lesson that you would say observing lemurs has taught you?
Well, certainly working with nocturnal species, I think always expect the unexpected. Having observed the northern giant mouse lemur and its close relatives in the field, they always seem to be exhibiting behaviors that you've never heard of before or things that you've never observed. So I think, there's always new things to be learned about animals as well. And I think this is something that would be true of most animals and organisms out there.
And what was some of the best advice from a mentor or colleague in conservation that you've received?
Best advice. Well, I think just keep an open mind. Keep your interest broad, I guess. Certainly with like my work with the northern giant mouse lemur, I think a lot of what I've learned about that species is quite applicable to lemurs in general. I think that by saving or by contributing towards the conservation of one species, you should strive to look at the bigger picture. How can we look at the forest as a whole? How can we improve the situation as a whole rather than just look at one animal, I guess.
And have there been, kind of conversely to that, any hurdles that you've had to face in your career?
Well, I think the main one with my research has been the COVID pandemic. I mean, putting that really halted all my field work, and I was because I was midway through a PhD, it was a major thing that I had to overcome. Fortunately, now we have good software available on computers, and there's a lot of published data that's already available that we can work with. It's possible to contribute to ecological research and conservation without having to go to the field. So during the pandemic, I actually decided to change my entire PhD project to a desk-based study using already published data to answer some broader Madagascar-wide conservation biogeography-related questions for some of the close relatives of the northern giant mouse lemur, the dwarf lemurs I looked at, and also the forkmark lemurs, which are two other groups of nocturnal lemur species, also quite understudied and poorly known. So I learned a lot really in that situation. We can actually contribute a massive amount to conservation without having to go to the field. But I was very keen to get back to the field site upon the when the borders reopened after the pandemic, and fortunately, I was able to go back and finish my work.
Yeah, certainly sounds like you're very adaptable in a time where a pandemic forced your hand.
Yeah, I think being a field researcher, you've got to be adaptable in general. You can arrive at the field site, the conditions can be different, or the animals just might not be where you expect them. So you have to always think on your feet and be a good problem solver in general. But yeah, on the scale of changing an entire PhD project, it's not
Yeah.
ideal.
That leads nicely into our next question then. What advice would you give to someone attempting to start a career in conservation research?
So I think if you're really passionate about conservation and it's something you want to pursue, I think that the main traits that you just need is perseverance and dedication. It's fortunately with conservation, it's something that we all want to contribute to, but if you want to pursue a career in conservation, there's, the opportunities, especially in employment, are far lower than the number of people that want to pursue these careers. Funding is also a major hurdle that you have to overcome for undertaking your own projects. So I think just perseverance and dedication. I think just keep persevering, try as hard as you can, try to build as many contacts as you can in the field, try to engage with as many people as possible. I think those are good starting points for getting involved in a career in conservation. I think if you have those traits, you can overcome the challenges.
And in your opinion, what is the biggest challenge facing conservation?
I think that there's two main challenges really, which I think is just the amount of problems we have outweigh the resources that we have to deal with them. I mean, as more and more people become involved in conservation, we are able to try and tackle as many problems as possible. But also funding is an issue. I keep referring to funding, but unfortunately, it's something that dictates what we can achieve. And I think the second biggest challenge is that the loss of natural habitat is often faster than we're able to protect that habitat and restore it. So it very often feels like a losing battle, but again, this is where perseverance and dedication comes in. I think we just have to keep trying, keep fighting the conservation fight, really. And
Yeah.
eventually I think we can overcome the situation. We can turn things around. I mean, a lot of conservation situations do look quite bleak, but I think through collaboration and hard work, I think we can overcome the challenges that we're facing.
Yeah, I certainly think there is a shift happening, but yeah, very good point. We obviously don't like to admit it, but to some extent money does make the world go round, and that's
Yeah,
obviously.
it's not just conservation. I think it's everything. If we don't have money, we can't do most things.
But yeah, hopefully, and that's obviously where modern efforts are in terms of building those relations to get that partnership and funding secured. So what else would you like to achieve in your career?
Well, my long-term ambition is to eventually have my own research group. So I'm currently now a postdoc. Later in the year, I'll be moving on to a new position with slightly more responsibility, sort of more of a management role of staff. So I'll have the opportunity to actually supervise more of my own students to conduct similar projects that I myself conducted as a master's and PhD student. So I think just eventually starting up my own research projects, long-term projects, and certainly a long-term research project with a conservation output in Madagascar is something that I endeavor to achieve in the future as well.
And what kind of gives you motivation to like say it is bleak? What gives you motivation to keep going?
Well, I think just knowing that the results that I'm able to get from my ecological and biogeographical research, it does contribute to the conservation of species. A lot of the data that I'm able to provide, it does paint the overall picture of the situation. So I do a lot of work with population density and how lemurs are distributed throughout certain regions or Madagascar as a whole, and this data is incredibly important with conservation assessments, so we know how threatened a species is. And then also, I'm now in the position where I'm able to actually transfer on my knowledge to students via tutorials or lecturing and as supervised postgraduates. So it's always a rewarding thing knowing that students are inspired by what I've done and they now want to pursue a similar avenue that I've taken and become involved in conservation research.
Fantastic. And on the note of your work, where can our listeners keep up to date with the work that you are doing?
So my personal work, I have my own website, so danielhending.com. If you just Google my name, I try and keep that as updated as possible with not just lemur related work but my other work in general. But the research outputs, the easiest place to keep up with that would just be through Google Scholar. That's the best source of published research. Twitter is always a great place to keep up with research. Academics that work in the fields of conservation are quite active on Twitter. I myself, if I've ever had some new research or field observations that I find interesting, I try to put them on my Twitter so that people with similar interests can check out what I've been up to. And then for on a more broad scale, sort of the conservation organizations that work in the field or are always updating their own websites. The societies that I've worked with, so Bristol Zoological Society, they always tend to keep up the information on their website about their conservation projects well updated, and the same can be said for the AECL, I think, as well. So just by keeping up to date with things online, I think is the best way, and through social media.
Amazing. So Dan, we're just going to finish up the episode with some light-hearted quick fire questions, as you've given us a wonderful insight into the kind of the ins and outs of a field biologist. So are there any dream species that you'd love to see in the wild?
So I'm currently working my way through the 108 lemur species. I'm up to about 50 now, so there's to complete that list in my lifetime would be good. More generally though, seeing gorillas in the wild, that would be cool. Also some of the big cat species that I've not yet seen. I've been fortunate to see lion, leopard and cheetah, but tiger and some of the smaller species, smaller, more elusive species would be really cool as well. Fortunately, a couple of years ago, I saw the eye-eye, which is a very
Oh,
difficult
amazing.
lemur to see in the wild. So that's one that was on my bucket list before, and I've been able to tick off.
Yeah, I suppose when you've got that many different lemur species to see,
Yes.
yeah, but yeah, certainly quite well, probably arguably the most unique lemur species, would you say, or?
Yeah, it's in its own taxonomic family, really, the II. There's nothing currently alive that's like it. Yeah, very unique, and I don't think there's any other animals like it.
And so obviously you've spent a lot of time in Madagascar, and now obviously with your African elephant research, you're spending a bit more time in Africa. Are there any other places that you'd love to visit or spend an extended amount of time?
Oh, there's plenty of places. Yeah, so I've recently been to Kenya, but there's many other countries in Africa I'd like to visit. There's probably too many to list here. I'd really love to go to India, I think, again, because it's a big country with so many different habitat types. You have the mountains, the forest, and the culture. I think that would be a really cool country to visit, to travel. I've also never been to South America or East Asia, so they're countries and regions of the world that I'd like to visit. And then I think, as someone based in the UK, I think most people here would all like to visit Australia, so that's another country that I would certainly like the opportunity to visit sometime in the future.
Fantastic. I certainly believe with your ambition that they will definitely happen. If you could be an animal, Dan, what would you be and why?
Well, having watched footage of the captive ones, I'd maybe the giant panda. I mean, they don't take life too seriously, do
No, they definitely don't.
they?
Yeah, don't get bored of watching videos from giant pandas in zoos. When you're not working, how do you keep busy?
Spending time with family, so spending time with the wife, just going out. We like walking, just getting out in the fresh air and outside of the city. I also play guitar, so that's one way I chill out when I'm not at the computer.
Amazing. Last question I've got for you then, Dan. What is one thing that you think our listeners should take away from today's episode?
I think just an awareness, first of all, that the northern giant mouse lemur is a thing, because I'm sure a lot of people probably weren't even aware that it was a species, and just some information about this relatively known species, its basic biology, and that it's threatened by habitat loss, and just that supporting conservation efforts are one way in which you can become involved in ensuring the survival of such an animal.
Fantastic point to end up on there, Dan. So a massive shout out to you for gracing the podcast with your incredible knowledge on turns out not just one species of lemur, but many, and keeping us enlightened on how we can all contribute towards their future. So we wish you all of the best with your future endeavours, and yeah, we'll be sure to keep up to date with all things lemur in Madagascar.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, great to be on the podcast.
A massive thank you to Dan once again for all his hard work in conservation and his time on the Conservationist Assemble podcast today. But as always, a huge thank you to all of you for tuning in and supporting the show. If you did enjoy this episode, please like, share, and review or rate the podcast, as it helps us to keep improving and spreading the word on the conservation efforts taking place around the world. Don't forget that you can always follow and interact with the podcast on Instagram, Facebook, or via email. I've been your host, Johnny Bloxham, and I hope to see you all next time.